Hello, and welcome everyone to Tierra Soul Talk Radio, where we encourage you to walk your sustainability talk. I am Krista Arias, co-founder of Tierra Soul, a farming and sustainability school in Portland, Oregon. So we've been interviewing some really fun guests, and today we have yet another one to share with you, and her name is Chris Antonius. Now, Chris has a crew of four budding naturalists, ages 4, 7, 10, and 13. And three of these she spends her days with every day, focused on simple living, learning, making, and eating. A former educator and huge fan of child-led learning, Chris learns alongside her children about nature, handcrafting, homesteading, and growing, cooking, and eating good food. So she also she is a wonderful crafter and homemaker. Her website at Tiny Peasant, we'll have a link at the end that we'll tell you about, is filled with wonderful ideas and things to help you on your journey in homeschooling, urban homesteading, and homemaking. So I met Chris, I've actually never met her face to face, but I met her online. This is a new era, hey. About a year ago through our mutual interest in farming and homeschooling. And I'm always inspired by the beauty in everything that she does. Really, I sometimes just go to her site and just rest there for a minute and take inspiration. So she's a true expert in making learning lovely, and her work is really, truly inspiring. You're going to love it. So hi, Chris. Welcome to Tierra Soul Talk Radio. We are so happy to have you here. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Krista. Thanks for the warm welcome and for your kind words.
Aw. So, I have a few, let's just go ahead and get started. I think what so much inspires me about your work, but one of the things that I really find myself watching in your world is, just that you homeschool your kids and how you do it with such beauty and simplicity and humility. Kind of, there's a real nice, when I come to your site, I see beauty, but I also don't feel like, oh, and Ma, I'm such a mess, So I kind of want to ask you about your journey in homeschooling today. So why did you start homeschooling in the first place?
Yeah, well, I just want to say thanks, first of all, for your comments there, because that's really important to me that people don't feel that kind of comparison game happening or, when I put stuff out there, I really want it to be something that will inspire and bless people and not make them feel like they're all over the place or don't have things together, because truly I don't have all things together and there's messes around all the corners of the photographs. So, to answer your question, homeschooling, it really seemed to feel like a natural offshoot for us to the home learning we were already doing with our kids when they were toddlers and preschoolers. Mm-hmm. We wanted to keep a long, steady flame lit under their curiosity and to encourage them to explore and build relationships with one another and also outside of our family with friends of all ages, with neighbors and mentors within our community and beyond that, rather than being in a classroom just with a homogenous grouping of children of the same age, and which might be a little bit more limiting.
I often think about that. Why do we put all the kids of the same age together? That kind of homogeneity doesn't really exist in nature or in real life. So
Actually, just a little anecdote was just before the holidays, we were taking swimming lessons, and I thought, even though I know this, that about the school groupings not really being a reflection of the rest of the world, I still have that little voice inside my head that says, well, what about socialization? What about making friends and that sort of thing? And I do think friends are important. And so I thought, well, hey, here's our chance to go and we'll be part of a group and we'll make friends. It turns out that our six-year-old son, Cohen, was the only one registered in his class. So he didn't have any friends in his class. And so after several weeks of that session, I mentioned to him, I said, Cohen, hopefully next time there'll be some other children in your class, so you can make some friends. Well, he informed me that in fact he had made a friend, Dave, his instructor,
Oh.
and that they had talked about diving and swimming, and Dave's dad, who runs marathons, and he asked me if we can get Dave's email and phone number.
Oh.
So I told him that probably wouldn't be appropriate, to do that, but that it was very wonderful that he had created a relationship with his teacher, and just it was such a reflection to me that he doesn't have that ingrained in him, that he can only make friends with other 6-year-olds or 7-year-olds, that he can make a friend with anyone.
Oh my gosh, that's such a great story. I just even want to take a moment to pause with that. It's just, oh yeah, a friend is a friend. And there is this really strong cultural voice about if your child doesn't have at least five friends of their own age in their own grade level, then it's not considered. I mean, those could be friends. I suppose people would give that, but it's not the kind of friends they're talking about that they need for this whatever socialization. So, but the truth is that we go into the world and we make connections all over the place, and that's all friendship is. So, wow, thank you.
So yeah,
So,
I guess, and the
yeah,
oh,
do you have
sorry.
more? Yeah, go. No,
Oh
please.
yeah, just to finish that off about why we started homeschooling, just as well that we really value the opportunity to have them learn at their own pace through their own interests and as much as possible out in nature. And then finally, that it's a little bit selfish, but we don't really want to miss the opportunity to learn alongside them and through them. We have some wise little folks here in our house, and they teach us every day.
And are you both involved in homeschooling, or do you do most of it, or how? I mean, do you mind
I do
answering that
most of
question?
it. No, not at all. No, I do most of the facilitating or, learning alongside the kids. And my husband is home during the day, so he has a lot of opportunities to check in on what we're doing, to celebrate with us, and he does woodworking with the kids on Wednesdays. So we have woodworking Wednesdays in the afternoons. They work on a project together, and I have a little break for work. So it works out really nicely.
So does that feel complete now? Did you have any? Okay, great. Okay, so it's interesting, from my perspective. I think I've, I don't, I, you know, we've talked, we've gotten to know each other a little bit, and I'm always curious about how people make homeschooling possible, especially, when they're doing it a little alternatively, not like setting up super structured lessons, and how to, how, of course, I think there is a human need for structure. So children, we probably all, I mean, I know I have a need for structure and predictability and certain things. So I'm wondering, what kind of, I mean, do you, if you use a particular curriculum and follow it strictly, or if you have other pedagogical influences, or how you balance all that, because what you're doing is, I'm curious how you're making that
Yes,
work.
and aren't we always curious about what other homeschoolers are doing with their days? So I know that feeling of wondering, what are they doing all day and how do they do it? So
Yeah, and how do you find that balance between too much structure where you're just exhausted? I mean, by trying to get, and then or you're overriding your children's lead, if you're doing child-led
Right.
learning, versus, just having everyone be feral.
Yes, yeah, and I think that really speaks to your whole course of lazy lady living and how can we apply those principles to our learning at home, and that we don't want to dominate our children and their learning process, but rather work with it. And so I guess if I had to label it, I would say it's like a holistic approach or an authentic learning approach. I've always kind of been of two minds. And so, I love the beauty and the warmth of summer and the lush greenery, but I also love the more stark beauty of winter. And I would love a rustic cottage in the woods. And I also love mid-century modern architecture. So I have a very hard time, really choosing one thing and sticking with it, unless it's a very fundamental, like core principle or something that I believe in. So I guess the core principle is that I really believe in a child-led learning approach, but we really pluck fibers from so many different philosophies and weave them into our own tapestry of learning. And so we appreciate the order and simplicity and somewhat the independence of a Montessori approach, but want to nestle that into a Waldorf rhythm that can carry us through our days and weeks. And we love the collaboration and community and creative focus of a Reggio Emilia approach, as well as the nature-based approach of Charlotte Mason. And so I'm a researcher at heart, and so part of my own learning journey is to feed my curiosity and my love for learning by researching all of these wonderful philosophies and kind of just taking what really speaks to my heart and what I think my children would appreciate, and trying to sort of carve out our own flow and rhythm to our days. So recently we've been really inspired by Self Design, which is a program out of British Columbia, and project-based homeschooling, which was written by Laurie Pickert. And so it's kind of that child-led learning, but with us curating and inspiring and facilitating as we walk together. So that's kind of our approach.
I love the word curating. I'm curious, just the idea that it sort of hangs on that in a way that, this sort of polarity of, your children are just sort of feral or neglected, they're leading, right? They're like, yeah, we'll have Cheerios and we'll have chocolate all day and, and chips or what, versus, a kind of really more ordered, structured one approach. And that this idea of honoring the child's lead, but also really owning that responsibility of curation and how powerful just that curating, even just the seeds of a daily rhythm, for example, can be in. So that's really interesting. I'm curious, you mentioned in British Columbia, what was the name of that?
Oh, it's called Self Design.
And can you give me a quick,
I
what
can
is that
speak to it a
sort
little bit.
of?
I was part of a Self Design learning circle here in Winnipeg, where we met online with a learning consultant from their program. And I'm still new to it and reading the book, which is, I'm sure it's available on Amazon and places like that. It's very similar, in my opinion, to project-based homeschooling, though it doesn't completely just focus on projects per se. But it's also very much about the parent as the observer. And so our role is to observe and to watch and question and take note of what our children are interested in, where their natural curiosity leads them, and then to play a supportive role to their lead in that. And so the practices of self-design really provide a lot of practical tips on how to make a learning plan with your child that they're guiding, and how to implement it on a day-to-day basis. Because a lot of it sounds really wonderful, the idea of child-led learning, and in the end, a lot of people I think end up feeling like you were just saying, like their children are running feral and doing whatever they want in all areas of life. But really, it's kind of like starting out with a hole in your boat, like you're going to end up sinking because it's not sustainable, and the kids need that framework as well, I think, so that they're not crashing and burning, and they need that someone to carry them along so that they can make those choices. So yeah, I think self-design has just been a really inspiring philosophy to learn about.
There was something else you said, sort of pulling out some of the gems. You said something about, oh, we wanted to learn alongside our children, and we didn't want to miss that opportunity. And I can't remember where I was reading about that recently, but the idea that I think perhaps it was related to a Waldorf teacher, and that every year they're teaching a different curriculum. And Waldorf is a pretty set curriculum, and but the teachers, a teacher may do two rounds, maybe three if they're lucky, in their lifetime of doing teaching first through eighth grade. So that means in a teacher's career, they may, if they have a full career, teach first grade three times. So every time it's new to them. And so that this idea that is actually useful for the child because the teacher is modeling, you know, a genuine struggle with the, you know, to with the material his or herself, and that is a huge piece of, you know, having your kids see how you approach a project, how a parent approaches a project and makes a plan to complete it, and to, you know, what areas is it going to cover, and how do they figure out what they, you know, just self-directed learning and emulating that. So that's a really lovely piece. And that I think is really important for homeschooling parents, because often we feel like, well, like, I mean, I certainly feel if I could do second grade now next year, then I would do it so much better. And, you know, but that the actual struggle with bringing it to your children, whatever it is that you're curating for them, or whatever it is that you are, you know, apprehending together is that's what it's all about. So that's
definitely. Yeah.
So
that really goes hand. Oh, sorry.
No, that's okay. Do if you have please.
Okay.
So you mentioned also the philosophies. I can't remember which one you mentioned, you know, particularly having to do with incorporating nature. What was that?
Right. Charlotte Mason is a
Charlotte Mason. Okay.
Approach, yeah.
So how do you, you know, I'm interested in that and how you say you're talking about learning math, or, you know, you can use whatever example you want, or, you know, but this is what I'm wondering about is how do you use nature to learn more traditional, like reading, writing, arithmetic skills, and also how do you bring in, you know, this craftiness that you're so good at into your school rhythm? Does that make sense?
It does. It does make sense. I think the first part of that question is a really huge, huge one.
Mm-hmm.
And we could probably talk for days about that. But the idea of learning the core curriculum through nature, you know, in terms of learning math skills, science skills, and reading or literacy skills, there's so much to find out there in terms of even just, you know, the Edible Schoolyard project that are popping up around North America and probably other places in the world as well, where, you know, even in a school setting, teachers are really making connections across the curriculum to study nature and learn about, you know, botany and the processes that happen inside of a plant, and how the foods can nourish our bodies. And so there's just so many connections to make. You know, we learn in our home about different healing herbs, and then we can go out for a walk in nature and we can identify them. So we're learning about, you know, opposite or alternate leaves, and we're covering some science curriculum, and we can bring them back and we can make a recipe out of them of a healing tea or maybe a salve or something like that, and we can incorporate math within that without even explicitly telling our children we're doing that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of ways to cover those areas of the curriculum.
Because it is true that when you go out into the world, you know, we don't ever just be like, hey, let's do some math.
Yeah.
Do you want to, let's go sit down and do some math, okay? Like, it's always connected to, I mean, and even high level mathematics. It's, I mean, I suppose, you know, at a certain point you get involved in, but even, you know, they're all the mathematical, even high level math has to do with, you know, real problems and wanting to solve them. So.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's all tied to is that, well, I often hear about homeschoolers that, you know, people ask me a lot, well, if I'm homeschooling, then what am I going to do when my children are like 16 and they don't know how to do this, you know, how to do algebra or don't know this science principle. And so I try and tell them what I've read, which is that often a homeschool child who recognizes a need for certain knowledge, they've already learned how to learn. And so they know how to find those answers, and they can go, and even if it is using a textbook or taking a class in a traditional setting, they can go and they can find the answers that they need. And often that learning happens at rapid pace because they know they need it or they truly desire to learn it. And when we want to learn things, it just comes so much more easily. And so they take the classes they need or get the knowledge they need to move forward with whatever their goal is. And so I'm not in a huge panic to make sure that my children learn every single thing that a traditional grade 1 or 2 or 5 student is learning, because I know that if there are gaps, and there probably will be gaps within our learning according to the Department of Education curriculum, that those can be filled in if they need to be, and that it's the curiosity piece and knowing how to learn,
Right, because you can have
or
someone
keeping that
who
knowledge alive. Yeah.
and someone who's gone through, K through 12 and has even taken tests in all areas, as they go through. They've been tested in on their knowledge. They may not even remember it, but at the end, often their this curiosity, this intrinsic motivation for learning is just kerfuffled because they've spent so many years in an environment where they're it doesn't make any sense what they're learning is not related to
Yeah.
anything. So that makes a lot of sense. Do you When you have, say, you have a mix of ages. So when you go out and you go into nature and you're learning about plants, is everyone learning? I mean, I'm assuming that they'll kind of self-regulate in terms of what they, how much they're interested in according to their developmental needs.
Yeah, and we do have different ages in our home, and definitely our 3, almost 4-year-old. We just say he's a 4-year-old now, so it's a little while longer. So, yeah, he doesn't participate as much with us in a lot of things. He's very welcome to at any time jump in, and often he asks me, "Mommy, aren't you going to ask me that question, or aren't you going to, involve me in this activity or whatever?" And so he's always welcome, but he often wanders off and engages himself in his own work of, building towers and stuff like that, which is his important work right now. So, but yeah, when we're in nature, we really are together, and we, whether it's, our daily time outside, just in our garden or snow hill in our backyard, digging and making mud pies and stuff like that, or a weekly excursion out into a larger natural area, we're all together, and each person will decide how to what extent they want to engage in nature. And so some of them might run super fast through the whole forest and not really stop to observe that much, because right at that moment they need to run. And another child might be,
You're a little
maybe,
bit quiet. Can you did you change
"Oh, am I?
something? Yeah.
Sure. Is this
Yeah, that's
okay to me?"
that's better.
Okay. So I was just saying that each child might respond to nature differently on any given day. One child might run through the forest super fast and not really seem to be taking in a lot of details, but they're still smelling and observing and touching things as they go, or they might stop when something catches their eye. And another child might walk so slowly it's almost painful for the rest of the group, because they want to look at every single seed and leaf and print and item that they find out there. And so we're really just exploring and foraging and sometimes tasting our surroundings. And so some of them want to keep going with learning more at home, where they want to bring nature back into the house, and that kind of relates back to the question too about crafting. So there's a lot of an intersection there between nature and art in our house. They'll bring back pine cones and pine needles and berries and leaves and all that kind of stuff to do leaf rubbings and different kinds of crafts. And so those can go onto our nature table or directly into a craft project, and they can go and help themselves to those items whenever they want for crafting or studying. So we like to keep a magnifying glass around those items so they can look for the details. And so that's kind of where the age difference or the developmental needs come in, so they can decide what they want to do with those items once they're there. So they've actually participated in the curation process in those things, and then they can do with it what they will after they get home.
And I mean, it makes sense that if it's, a lot, the curriculums that are geared toward developmental stages, if they're truly developmental stages, then the children will intrinsically be reaching for that.
Yeah, and I think that I do really, even though we don't follow a curriculum and we don't sit down at 9 o'clock every morning and break out the books to do learning time, I do really value the Waldorf attention to ages and stages, and Steiner's writing about what each child needs at that stage, what they want to learn about. So at one age, they really want to learn about shelter and how they can provide for themselves, whereas in another age, they might need to learn about the greater world and, the different populations of humanity that have existed, or so on and so forth. And so I do keep an eye on those things when I am doing that curating. And so I often look at Waldorf curriculums online and see, like, oh, what are they covering in grade one and what are they doing in grade two, so that I can get an idea and try to feed those innate desires that they have for learning about certain things at certain ages.
And so, I mean, that kind of segues into my next question, which is, do you know this sort of the child-led learning, do you temper it with any required curriculum? Or, I mean, do you ever find yourself just worried about something and so you just find yourself introducing it? Or sometimes I think it's possible to even be like just inspired and think, I for some reason I'm going to bring this to my child, or how do you do that if you do it at all? I mean, it sounds like you just mentioned sort of looking at Waldorf basic guidelines and
Right. Yeah, I think at the beginning of the year, I often do look around. I look at even our local Manitoba curriculum. I look at at Waldorf curriculum, and I do a lot of searches online for, in a Montessori classroom, how are these things being manifested in their activities, and so try and kind of create a mashup of what the most common thread is there. And I mean, I do believe there are reasons why there are certain themes that come up over and over again at certain age levels, and that it's not just kind of a willy-nilly approach to let's just put a bunch of themes in a hat and pick them out.
Right. Well, we need
So
these 10 themes. Let's put them through first through 10.
yeah. So I think there is value in that, and of course, you know your own children, and you'll know if they're not interested at all in a certain topic, or if they're just not ready for it, or they're beyond it. And so I feel like, having been an educator in the school system, I was really trained to teach in a teacher-centric way. And I have to admit that even though I've done all this reading and it's my heart's desire to follow their lead, it is a lot of work for me to move from a teacher-centric model to one that's child-led. And so that's that planner in me where I want to kind of take control of it all and plan everything because I love planning. So we're definitely not unschoolers. My husband and I, mostly myself, I guide a lot of aspects of our learning. So we follow a food curriculum, like we do baking and cooking and stuff like that on Mondays. We attend a homeschool group on Tuesdays, swimming on Thursdays. We learn about healing plants on Fridays. And so those are all things that I've chosen for us to do, and
So
they're
that's your
excited about them.
curation.
Right. And so if they were not excited at all to do some of them, then we revisit that, and it's not some, like, I don't ever want it to be a chore for anybody.
Which is different than a discipline or a practice, Like, oh, I just, to never lose sight, I guess it's like never losing sight of why you're doing something, because sometimes you can be in a hard moment, but if you know why you're doing it, then it can get you through. It's this losing the connection with why you started something in the first place.
Right, yeah, and there are hard moments almost every day, and so it is, you're right, it's good to keep in mind the reasons why we're doing the things we're doing, and I feel like, they're happy to have that knowledge that they are being carried, that there is a rhythm to our days and our weeks, and that they don't always have to be asking me, what are we doing now? What are we doing now? And at the same time, they know that they have space to do what they would like to do, and that we don't necessarily have to have reading time every day or at a certain time every day, but that if I see a window of opportunity, I'll just say, hey, would you like to come and sit with me in the reading nook and read a few stories? Or they might ask me, I want to read some of these books right now. Can you come and sit with me? And so it's really creating invitations for learning around our house and space where it's not, we're not constantly going from activity to activity, so that they have have that space to figure out what they want to learn and then have time to do that. And it's been very inspiring to read Lori Pickert's book, Project-Based Homeschooling, because it did really make me realize that even though I sort of have thought I've been following a child-led model, you know, by allowing them to choose topics and themes and stuff like that, and then having myself curate, okay, well, here's an activity on this shelf and here's a pile of books over here. I still love doing that, but I've really tried to carve out project time for them a few times a week where they actually can completely lead themselves in that, and that my job then is to observe, to take notes, to write down their questions, make notes of materials that they're requesting, and just really take that supporting role to them. And so that's within that larger framework, though, of me definitely being a facilitator and kind of, you know, strewing things around our home for them and creating a rich learning environment. And then the other piece is that I really think that a lot of our skills have been lost, and I really want to learn alongside my children to reclaim those skills. So that's something that I don't really feel comfortable. I almost feel more comfortable leaving the math to chance than leaving that to chance. Like I really want them to leave our home prepared and you know, knowing how to nourish themselves and their friends and family, and how to create and how to write a letter to someone, how to heal themselves naturally, and those sorts of things. And so that's why I really do sort of make that a necessity in our house, that, okay, this is baking day and we're baking now, and you're going to learn how to spread and how to do these things. And that's part of why I created that Tiny Peasant Pantry package too, is that I really wanted to work with my niece, who's 10, on a lot of these skills more formally. And so we've been working through the baking, and we'll move on to the cooking and healing tea sections. And it's something that she'll be able to take with her when she leaves too. She'll have recipes like your awesome recipe that you contributed. And we keep a little, we have kind of like a pirate treasure chest, a wooden box, and it has recipe cards in it. And, you know, when we make something that they really like, they write it down on the recipe card. And then when they move out, they can take it with them.
Wonderful.
They'll have made those recipes themselves and liked them. And so they can take them. And when they're off in college or whatever, exploring the world, they'll have this little set of recipes with them. So those are the kinds of things that I, as I said, I just really am not willing to just leave to chance.
Right. Oh, that's wonderful. I love that. I'm going to quote you on that. I'm, you know, I'd rather leave math than, you know, these things. Cause I remember getting out of school, and I mean, I just didn't even go to most of high school, and then I was out free, and I was like, I didn't know how to even, I mean, I just thought you'd turn 18 and magically it would all be there for you or something, because, yeah. And it was such a disconnect, and a lot of, you know, that I had to kind of start at 18 where I might have been at 10, you know, given a different, you know, situation.
Definitely. I was really inspired by my husband's mother, actually, because she has 5 boys. And they each, I think when they turned 10 or 11, they were each cooking one dinner a week. So she only cooked meals on the weekends, and they did
everything,
a lot
else.
Of chores. Serious chores, right? So, and so I was just very inspired by that. And so our 13-year-old nephew, he cooks often once a week, unless he's got a very busy week with school stuff. He is in school. And he loves cooking, and we watch, you know, Jamie Oliver's Food Revolution, and just try and make it fun and interesting, and he's really embraced it. And he makes, you know, like goat cheese and roasted vegetable sandwiches and all kinds of great stuff.
And was he homeschooled earlier?
No, he's been in school all along.
Okay.
But we do try to carve out ways to learn together, you know, on the weekends and in the evenings and in the summertime, you know, in the garden and and stuff like that, because I want him to be equipped with those skills.
What a beautiful story about that. I remember I recently, well, it was a couple of years ago, went on a farm tour, and this family had 12 kids. And, you know, that mother really, she was a manager. She didn't really have to do much. She didn't have to do all the chores and all cooking. She's like, I've got my crew, like whoever's on my crew for breakfast. I was like, oh, because I was like, well, what's your rhythm like? Like, how do you make it work? And, you know, I imagine because I had little kids at the time, you know, that she had to cook for like whatever, 15 people every day. And it was, you know, I was like, no, actually. So, you know, I only have two kids, so they'll, you know, but also that sort of comes to the sort of, you know, we have some roommates right now in our slow season with the farm stay program, and we've been really enjoying everyone in the house cooks one night a week for the whole group, and I am cooking one night a week. It's amazing.
Oh,
And then, you know, Anka cooks one night and David cooks one night, and Fia and Shoko have their night, and you know, they're 4 and 8, so it's a little bit. But they actually just last week they cooked the entire meal. There was someone there to ask questions and get tips, but they did the whole thing themselves. And
Oh, that's great.
yeah, and so it is really true. This, you know, knowing how to be in tune with your own rhythm and to then translate that into creating a life that's going to honor your rhythm. Things like that. It's huge. Which kind of segues into my next and final question, which is kind of a big one. You know, I know that you know, obviously you're doing a lot of research and planning for homeschooling, along with doing the homeschooling, as well as you're running a home-based business and you know, you're contributing to the world. You know, you have your own, you know, work in the world. So, you know, do you have any hints for our listeners on how to put it all together? You know, especially, you know, I think, you know, internet use for those of us who run web-based businesses, how to find time for it all, you know, because the idea is to not be what you're hoping for your children to not be then having, you know, yourself that you're like, oh, you know, you're sort of at in this frantic pace or something. Does
Yeah,
that make sense?
it does. And it's very close to home.
Yeah.
it's not something that there's, you know, a formula, a recipe for that I've discovered yet. I definitely have learned some lessons the hard way in that area, and I am very fortunate that my work and my life overlap so much. So, you know, I'm developing learning materials for my children. And then it becomes my work too. And so, you know, I refine it a little bit further and then I put it out in my shop or, you know, give it away to people who are visiting my blog. And, you know, a lot of the stuff that I write about on my blog is just what we've done. And so it's not extra, not that much extra work. It is still extra work. I won't kid anybody. So the thing that I did learn the hard way was that I'd often have my computer out on the main floor during the day while my kids were learning, and you know, well, I'll just check in my email for a couple seconds over here, or I'll work on this client project for a few minutes there because I do still do work for other clients as well. And I'd start to wonder why my children were losing their marbles, and I was wondering why they were so needy. And then I realized it's not that they who are acting poorly, it's me, you know, because I'm spreading myself too thin and I'm not intentional or fully present in either of those things. I'm not with them and I'm not fully present in my work. And so that's not fair to clients or to myself, you know, that I find fulfillment in my work and I'm not really being fulfilled by that in that moment either. And so, you know, I've really just been trying to separate the two as much as I can. And I guess my advice would just be to, you know, try to work, rise with the sun and work before, you know, your daily rhythm, or make that a part of your daily rhythm, but before everybody else is awake and the action and activity take place, or in the evening after children are asleep. I've also heard of a few people who've really been blessed by having a mother's helper who can come to the home and help with the children and chores around the house so that you can carve out an hour or two during the day, even while you're homeschooling, to have focused work time. And even, you know, homeschooling in community can be a really big thing when you have other homeschooling families where, you know, you can drop your child off at their house for a day and they can drop their children off at your house for a day and everybody can have that. You know, the opposites get those as work days. Other than that, I haven't found any huge answers other than just to be patient with ourselves and to recognize too that, you know, it's, you were saying before, I think, you know, that it's really good for our children to see us working and struggling. I think that since we started doing project time, we've also followed it with quiet time. And so in the afternoons, on the days where we're home for the whole day, they have project time and I'm really with them and present in that time. And then during quiet time, they can keep working on a project or they can read or craft or basically do any kind of play or learning quietly in their space. And so I've started taking that time for my work, and I'm not going into an office and closing the door. I'm out where they can see me, but they see that my work is important to me, mm-hmm. and they know that their work is also important to me. And so we're just kind of working alongside one another, you know, trying to respect each other's, you know, need for quiet or whatever their need is. But it's, so it's not a perfect situation, but it's definitely something that I'm seeing is becoming a really beautiful time for everybody.
Mm-hmm. So there are a couple things like you, that you mentioned, you know, one of them was, you know, that it is pretty valuable. So just wanting to sort of reflect on it a minute, you know, working in a way that is aligned with your life, with one's life and with one's values is, you know, a huge way to be more efficient. You know, in a way we're talking about this, you know, the lazy lady life, and what's the, you know, in the smallest change that you can make, you know, the getting up early with the sun. I mean, that's what I do personally. Mm-hmm. And I find that it works incredibly well, except when I put too much on my plate, so that ends up exhausting me. But but certainly just having that time for solitude, because when you have children around all day long, a solitude is a need, and if you don't get nourished with it, then it's hard to be available, because you're always trying to get the solitude that you didn't, that you aren't getting in, you know, in other small moments. So, and then the other thing you said was, oh, I love, you know, which had to do with, you know, multitasking and kind of letting go of multitasking, and that it's okay to carve out times where everyone's working independently. And I think that just for those of you who only have small children, those of our listeners, you know, who only have small children, this is a time that is going to end. Even if you end up having more small children, once you have a child that's, you know, 7 or 8, 9, you know, you start having, it's a different situation, because those little ones are then being held, not just by you, but also by the other olders in the group. And so there is a space for everyone working independently, and maybe it rotates, you know, one of the olders, including yourself, helps with the, you know, toddler age kids. So, you know, it gets easier. And, you know, this idea of working alongside your children, but that they know now we're working alongside each other. And before this, mama was available for us. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, I've been amazed at how, you know, I think, oh, they need me so much. And I realize that's because I'm not actually giving myself to them. And if I just give myself to them literally 15 minutes an hour, they really will kind of be happy often for the rest of the time. So, so it's, and it sounds like you also have help one day a week, and maybe, and do you homeschool all 5 days a week, or do you have a day that sort of a down day?
Yeah, I guess because we sort of consider ourselves to be learning all the time,
mm-hmm.
we are homeschooling all week.
Mm-hmm.
We have my husband who does woodworking on Wednesday afternoons.
Mm-hmm.
And then other than that, we don't do any kind of co-teaching or co-learning with another family. But we do have breaks in our day where I still need to be fully present with the children, like swimming lessons, and we go to a homeschool co-op. And so those are different aspects or different environments for learning to take place. But definitely mm-hmm. all week we're working on projects and playing together and building things and reading and all of those sorts of things. So it goes on all week, but I can't really agree with you more about that, just that focus time with the kids really being an investment for your whole day. Again, my husband's mother, she just used to say to us all the time, I used to just spend 30 minutes with each child in the morning. Like, her children were pretty spaced out, so it wasn't like she had five children she had to spend half an hour with individually. But, you know, just with the children, she'd spend a half an hour totally focused on them and dedicated to being with them. And then she could go about her day for the most part, you know, doing her work, her chores, her cooking, and whatever whatever else she needed to work on while they played on and worked on their own stuff. And I see that in our family too, that that time of focused attention really helps and really kind of fills their tank for the rest of the day. And I think too, starting from a young age, encouraging them to be creative and curious really makes a difference, because there's days where I come downstairs and they're already playing. And they're so happy and they're so engaged. And I just think, should I really interrupt this?
Yes, I know.
Some other activity. And so I just let them play. And there honestly have been days where they have done that all day. And so I just quietly grab my computer and I, you know, sit at the table so I'm nearby. But then I have a work day and they are just totally happy and engaged with one another. So I don't see any reason to interrupt it, because they're, you know, they're learning through their play and building little cities out of blocks or whatever they're doing. So it's really neat to have children who know how to entertain themselves and feel that their play is valuable. And
It's interesting. Yeah. You know, playing is a way of integrating it all, and it's, yeah, it's great. It's been so great talking with you. Thank you, Chris.
Thank
I mean,
you too.
Oh my goodness, what rich stuff. Thank you so much for joining us. It was awesome. So all of you, if you would like to see Chris's work, you can go ahead and head over to tinypezzet.com. There is a link below. And this is Krista Arias of Tierra Soul. And this has been Tierra Soul Talk Radio. Thanks for joining me. So,
thanks.
Chris,
I didn't say thank you to you.
I know. I just, like, it's totally silly. And I realized, like, I just naturally went along. And then I cut you off because you were, I didn't realize where I was.
Yeah.
I just was spontaneously there. So if you can just say right now, I'm going to say the line and then you can say it and then I'll just cut it in. Okay.
Okay. Sure.
So Chris, thank you so much for being with us today. It was such a rich experience, you know, just being with you, and thank you so much for sharing.
Well, thanks for inviting me to participate, Krista. It's been really fun, and you inspired me to really take a closer look at what we've been doing and kind of dissect it and think about it and be re-inspired. So I really appreciate it.
Thank you. So if you'd like to learn more about Chris's work, you can head over to tinypezzet.com. There's a link below, as always. And this is Krista Arias of Tierra Soul, and this has been Tierra Soul Talk Radio. Thanks for joining me.